Welcome to On the Money, where you can find out anything and everything to do with finance, business and the economy. On the Money comes to you from the studios of Radio 2SER and broadcast nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Tanya Katsanis, and this week we're celebrating International Women's Day. It's the day we celebrate those women who are paving the way for positive change, fighting for equity in the workplace and equality in society. Part of that struggle is to fight for female financial independence. It's still breathtaking that Australian women represent less than 20% of senior roles in organisations, and most are retiring with 20.5% less super than men. So, this International Women's Day will focus on women in business. What are the present benchmarks? How much has changed? And how much still needs to change in order to achieve equality of opportunity? And how do we ensure equality for women as they transition into those retirement years? It's going to be a great show. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to On the Money. International Women's Day is Sunday, 8th of March, and the theme for 2020 is Each for Equal. It's a great theme when you're talking about women in business. So here joining me on this very special show is Natasha Jensen's accountant, founder of Women with Sense and author of Wonder Woman's Guide to Money, and Lydia Musa, founding director and lead facilitator of the Change Hub. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you. Hi.
Now, Natasha, you're joining us via phone, only because you've got to rush out and grab some kids later. But again, that's something that working women do. So I wanted to start with a very easy question. How far off are we from equality in the workplace? And that one's for you, Natasha.
Oh, goodness me. I think, if we could get it for my daughter's generation, I would be happy. But I think it's going to be a long, long journey. And part of that is predominantly to do actually with the behaviours that we're all conditioned to and that we're modelling for the next generation. So my husband and I are very conscious of trying to shift, you know, the norm and what we're presenting to the kids as being, you know, normal social standards and what's expected of boys versus girls.
Now, Lydia, you are obviously a change facilitator. You run the Change Hub. What is it in the workplace that you see that influences, obviously, having that, gaining that equality in the workplace?
Well, what we see is every organisation is different, every industry is different, even down to every department might be a bit different. So to really, there's no one answer, actually, but studies show that there are a multitude of different barriers that can lead to something like this. So you have to actually take the time to find out what the underlying root causes are or barriers are that are preventing that equality.
But is there a particular barrier that you see that's a common thread? I know every business is different, but is there something that you can sort of see is common throughout?
So we can look at the setting itself and look at barriers such as existing, obviously the existing culture, leadership, the incentives in place. You can also look at the existing communications and the way teams run. So there's so many things that can contribute to that. But yes, the culture and obviously leadership are two huge topics that need to be tackled. And there's so many different strategies that you can do to tackle these two big areas.
And if we're talking in the workplace, let's talk about the pay gap, because obviously that's constantly in the media where there's issues. Now, Natasha, you obviously teach money, you teach ladies and women about money management. The pay, is that a pay gap, is a big issue for them or not?
In what sense are we talking if the pay gap is an issue?
From their getting financial independence.
Well, look, obviously, you know, it makes the more you earn, the easier you will hit all your targets. You know, it certainly makes an impact. And then when we look at the compounding impact of the fact that lower pay results in lower super, which is then accumulating at a slower pace as well, it will certainly add up over the years for sure.
So when you do these education, financial education for women, do you teach them how to negotiate or to understand their worth in the workplace or not?
It's something that we're starting to get involved with, especially around the psychology of money, because a lot of that, you know, it plays such a huge impact, especially if you have low self-confidence. And as women, we value ourselves in so many ways as others value us. So, you know, what does that say to you if you know that you are paid less versus your male colleagues? Obviously, that's going to have an impact on your perception of your self-worth and your ability to then negotiate a higher pay rate in the future. So it's certainly something we're starting to look at doing more of, for sure.
And tell me, what do you see are the biggest challenges facing women for getting financial freedom?
To be honest, the biggest challenge is that we have been conditioned to prioritise the urgent over the important. So as women and as girls, you know, looking at how our mums are behaving, and I know I'm making huge generalisations here, but in so many cases, you know, we're conditioned that it's our responsibility to look after everyone. It's our responsibility to look after the household. It's our responsibility to look after the cooking and the groceries and the laundry. And so what I see so often, and it's such a huge part of my job, is trying to make women realise that we can't afford to think that way anymore, because you'll never reach that point where you have time to think about your super or to look at investing and those sorts of things. And that's the biggest obstacle that I find, is women just feel like they don't have the time for it because there's other things that are more pressing that are expected of them.
So, Lydia, I see you're nodding your head. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with Natasha. I think that whole important versus urgent thing, and that's something that is all around, you know, your capacity. So what is your in your capacity? And as women, yes, we do try and go beyond our capacity and we think we can multitask. And sure, many of us can, but it's about the mentality of, well, we don't actually need to do it all. And to have to create a support network of some sort. And that's what gets me through, really. I've got two young ones under five, and having a support network is by far the biggest help that I've gotten to achieve anything, really. So I think it's about our own mindset sometimes, knowing that we can let go and giving and empowering others around us to be able to take ownership of those things. I mean, yes, we might do it at 98% and someone else might do it at, you know, 90%, but be happy with that and being able to say, you know what, yes, I'm okay to
so
do this.
So are we educating the wrong sex? Should we be focusing on saying to men, hey, you need to step up and do this, rather than telling women, hey, you need not to feel guilty?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, right? And rather than an educating men kind of way, it's more about empowering men. You know, we always talk about empowering women, but I think we also need to empower men to let them know that they are great dads and they can really support us in so many other ways, not just financially. And being able to have the open conversation with our partners and with our families and being able to say, you know what, I actually can't do it on our own. I don't want to do it all, because I see value in my kids spending time, quality time with their dad or with my parents or with their aunties and uncles. So being able to just say, you know what, I'm not going to do it all. And are empowering others around me too.
So when we're looking at that, and especially because women do want it all, and are we asking for too much? Do you think it's exhausting and we're never going to achieve it?
I think, I mean, I'm not sure what Natasha's take on that is, but I think we can achieve what we set out to do, but we can only achieve it through collaboration with others around us. I mean, we can't do anything alone. Not move forward faster or improve anything if we do everything alone. I think it's a really isolated mentality, and it will exhaust us, and we will be burnt out, and we'll be constantly kind of reacting and firefighting rather than being a bit more proactive and more in control.
Natasha, how do you feel about that?
Look, I agree, and I thought you used a very interesting word just before, and that's guilt. I felt an immense amount of guilt when I was letting go of the mental load. You know, like I was less of a wife and I was less of a mother and, you know, and I was failing family members or workplaces or whatever if I wasn't taking it all. And when we think about that, a lot of that has come, if we look at all the marketing, everything, you know, and even if we look at, you know, the magazines in the 50s, it was all about being the perfect, housewife, having the perfect home, you know, all that pressure for everything to be perfect. And that's what we have to realize, is that it doesn't have to be perfect. Exactly as what Lydia said, done is better than perfect, you know. And often we can sort of block our own progress by thinking, oh, well, you know, by the time I tell you how to do it, I may as well go and do it myself, or it won't be done right. And it's like we really have to work on letting that go and going, who cares? You know, if you eat toast for dinner every night this week, it doesn't matter. You know, he will learn how to cook.
But it doesn't. But the interesting thing is, and I when I sit down with other women who've had small businesses, the one interesting factor is, and this happened to you, Natasha, in one of your interviews I read, that your work-life balance revolves around the needs of your kids to do school drop-off, etc. So when women go into business or to start their own business, and if they've got families, they always factor in how they're going to manage their family life or their children. So then what they will do is postpone or lengthen that trajectory to success because they need to work around their kids' needs. So do you think that we also have to change the mindset and get our partners or parents or carers to step up and help us?
Absolutely. And this is where that pay gap comes into it, because what I see, and it's the same thing when you're starting up your business as well, but also I see it so often with couples, it's really so much of a focus on gender roles, and it more ends up being a financial decision. The one who gets paid less will be the one who'll cut back more. And what I found was, when I was starting my business, I remember I valued my husband's time over my own purely because his business was more established. We felt the cash flow impact more immediately than what we would, you know, with a startup that isn't bringing that cash flow in. And he and I had to make a conscious effort to go, actually, we can't work with the short-term lens, otherwise it's never going to get there. I have to value my time as though my business is fully fledged. And if I wasn't self-employed, I would say I have to value my time just as much as I value my partner's, because otherwise it will always be me compromising on my time because I feel that it's worth less and makes less of a contribution. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. But again, when we talk about two women, women will always factor in, if they have a family, where how they're going to manage that life. So we haven't learnt to let go is probably the main thing. So
yeah, because it's that role modelling that we're taught, that it's, you know, it's our responsibility to make sure everyone is looked after. So it becomes about, as you say, couples having that conversation, families having that conversation and going, well, actually, let's all sort of band together and look at who can take on what. But you're right, you know, some of it is in our nature that we're just going to naturally look out for others, you know. So, yeah, it's just something to be mindful of and work together as a team.
My name is François Carrière. I am at the UTS Business School, and you are listening to On The Money, summing up finance in one easy bite.
And Leah, do you feel that women do put pressure on each other to be successful in every aspect of their life?
Definitely not on purpose, maybe. I don't know. I don't think it's on purpose. I think now with social media and how close everyone and everything is, I think it just happens by osmosis. And I think it's just more of the perception that people have and what success is, because I think everyone should and does have a different version of what success looks like. I mean, one person and one family's look of success might be a great family, healthy children. Another one could be a financial status. Another one could be reputation. Whatever it is, everyone has a different version of success. So I think in this day and age, we do compare a fair bit because everything is out there. But I think it's up to us to look at what our needs are as a family, what our priorities are as a family, and what it is that our goals are. So if we step back and stop looking externally and start looking internally, then we don't need to compete and we don't need to have this status quo of what success looks like for a woman. It's more around what is good for me and my family. What, like Natasha said, what have I spoken to my partner about and what have we agreed on? And to be able to face everyone else and say, you know what? This is something that we've spoken about and this is our life. This is how we run it, whether it's, you know, my husband staying at home or I'm the one who's looking after our children, whatever it is, this is what works for us. Now, in terms of, support networks, yes, we do need to be able to educate, but we also need to be able to say, well, you know what? Yes, I will put them after school. My daughter is in after school care 4 days a week.
Yep.
You know, and obviously when you first think about it, that you're like, oh, I felt a bit guilty at the start, but how else am I going to have a full day of work from, you know, if I'm not doing 9:30 to 2:30? I can't establish a business that way. So I'm okay with that. And actually, our relationship has improved dramatically as well.
You probably need that free time. But I also wanted to talk about financial independence for a woman or getting financial understanding or financial education, because I don't... Traditionally, again, and these are all the stereotypes, women are known as the shoppers or the spenders, so we're not very good with our money. So, Natasha, from your point of view, when you're holding these seminars to educate women, what are the top three sort of tips you sort of try and instill in them so they can walk away?
Well, look, the first is for them to be able to recognise the two biggest risks to a woman's financial independence. And from where I sit, I see that as being number one when we get into a relationship, because that's where the gender stereotypes will come into it without either person really realizing it. But often at that point, you may have been, you know, an independent woman looking after your finances. That's all great when it's you on your own. But when you team up, what I see very often, unless we make a conscious effort to override it, very often we'll, as women, feel the pressure to look after the household, as I said before, and then we'll delegate the responsibility of investment and super and more long-term planning to our partners. So that's number one. We need to still, doesn't matter who's doing it, we need to still be actively involved in the decision-making. And then the second risk comes if we decide to have children, because at that point, so many of us are taking a step back from work. And when that becomes an extended time frame, if you had a few kids, for example, now what you're starting to do is sacrifice your ability to earn your own income. And we live in such a competitive environment that it can take you just being out of the workforce for a few years, you start to then struggle to get your foot back in that door. So that's my first point, is raising awareness of what the risks are so that women can start to manage it. And even if, you know, if it was always your dream to be a stay-at-home mum, to recognise that you can't necessarily afford to do that anymore, and you need to find a way to maintain your own independence. So that can be through, you know, doing a little bit of freelancing or volunteering and being involved with charitable organisations. It'll be great for your sanity as well, but also just as far as keeping your CV current so that you still have that ability to step out on your own if something happens and you need to do that. So that's the main one. But as far as tips, look, it's about women realizing that we're not bad at money, that we're actually incredibly good at analyzing options, which is great when it comes to investing and those sorts of things. So just building up our confidence as well to get involved, and making sure that together with our partners, even if we're delegating things, that we're still being involved in it together. So making joint plans, both for short, medium and long term, looking at simple ways to automate our money and making sure that we prioritize our savings. So, you know, not falling into that trap of waiting for that day when there's money to save, but actually making your goals and your saving goals and plans, treating that as a non-negotiable, the same way you would treat a bill, and then forming your financial decisions around everything else, which includes where you live and what car you drive and all the rest, around what you can afford in order to be able to, you know, save for the future and achieve your goals.
So can I ask, is it a wise decision if you're in a relationship that you have a separate bank account to that of your partner as well? Is that important for maintaining some independence?
It depends, first of all, whose names they are in. It also depends on how long you have been in a relationship and what the dynamic is like otherwise. But I always say, look, having the ability to access your own money is extremely important. And, you know, I've had women ask me about, you know, keeping runaway money or something like that. That's perfectly fine. But the red flag should be if you feel that that money needs to be secret. So if there's any secrecy in the relationship, whether that's about savings and assets or whether it's about debt, that then starts to become a red flag from that point of view.
And look, having conversations with anybody around money is always one of those really touchy subjects, especially when you're talking about spending habits. So the question is, and I also read in one of your interviews, Natasha, that you mentioned that in one of your conversations, you need to have fun around having that conversation about money. How do you do that? How do you have fun about a money conversation?
Yeah, so it's mainly around attaching it, you know, to goals. So having a chat around, but just about your lifestyle, because your life decisions are your financial decisions. You know, your life goals are the financial goals. So just sitting down and talking about the fun stuff. What do we want to be doing next year? What do we want to be doing, you know, in 5 years' time or 10 years' time? And then, you know, gradually starting to work backwards from there. Because the mistake that so many of us make is we don't talk about money. We're not taught to talk about money because it's taboo, it's private, it's hush-hush. And there's a lot of pride and shame and a whole lot of emotions that are attached to the topic as well. So the risk becomes that we only start to talk about it when tensions are running high and when we're really stressed out. And that just doesn't do any good to your stress levels or to the relationship. So, yeah, taking the time to talk about the good stuff and plan that in ahead of time is a really good habit.
Now, Lydia, I want to go back to you because obviously you've got the Change Hub and you're a facilitator for change within the workplace. But you started off as a pharmacist and, again, male-dominated. So the transition from one career to the other, did you experience any roadblocks?
In the transition, it wasn't around road. I mean, obviously, there's roadblocks with any transition career, but it wasn't around male dominated or not. Actually, pharmacy is female dominated. Yeah. So there was nothing in that sense. For me, growing up, I never had that as a thought. Even because I was born in Egypt and lived there for 10 years and I'm one of three girls. So for us, it was back there, that is a male-dominated country and that, you know, a woman is really at the lowest of the status or of the, you know, food chain, if you like. So for us coming from a setting like that to here, this is the land of opportunities. You know, you don't see it in that light. Obviously, growing up and then hearing more about it, you realize it. But as I grew up, I think for me, I felt that it didn't really affect me much and I didn't feel inferior or superior to men in any way.
So you felt like they're equal?
Growing up, yeah, definitely.
And it was more about starting my merit. This business, starting the Change Hub?
Again, I've always felt it's around my own merits and what I have been able to achieve rather than looking at my counterparts or what they've achieved. It's always been around, well, if I don't know how to do it, I could either find someone else who knows how to do it so that I can have that capability in-house, or I can upskill myself. And that's what led me to do my PhD in change implementation so that I can go out there and say, well, actually, I know my stuff really well. And, you know, there's none of this, you know, imposter syndrome that lots of people talk about. So it was around equipping myself and being able to have that capability and putting it in my own control rather than leaving it up to what's out there.
So in terms of wanting to start your business, did you have to seek investors? Did you find any issues with that, or you've just basically will grow organically?
I'm going through organic growth at the moment, which has been working well so far. And I think, you know, if the time comes and I do need to scale up, which is hopefully on the horizon, then I will seek investment. And, you know, I'm part of the UTS startup community because that's where I'm completing my PhD. And they've been really supportive in putting startups out there that have showcase our what we do, and we pitch constantly, and they just put us out there to network, and that's been really great. And I don't see any there's a huge diversity, so I don't see any of that male versus female kind of inequality in any way. So I think, again, it's about looking at ourselves with our own merit and looking at our own capabilities and what we can bring on to an organisation, and just a shift in our own mindsets.
But I also think, especially women, because there is more women are starting their own businesses than ever before, that probably offers you a more level playing field than being an employee in a corporate workplace. Would you agree with that statement?
I think yes, because you're making your own rules, right?
That's right, and you're basically fine. So, and Natasha, what do you feel about that statement? Do you think it's a much more even playing field? When you started your business, for example, did you find it easier?
Look, I had a very similar experience to Lydia. I worked a lot in sort of male-dominated professions, and it was such a norm to me that I never really looked through a gender lens. And I was very fortunate to have some really strong mentors. Although I do recall working at a big corporate firm many years ago, and when I was looking at going part-time, having the challenge of being told, well, you know, how do we put you up for a promotion when you're working part-time? You know, how do we justify that? And that's really where I feel that the challenge lies. And so I feel that as a society, it's not so much that we have a conscious bias against women as such, but we have a cultural bias against anyone who's part-time. It just happens that the majority of women are the part-time workers, and that's what we need to look to shift.
Now we need to wrap up. We always run out of time because we have so much fun. So if I could finish with a final question. In all that we've discussed in getting equality and equity in the workplace, is what's the one piece of advice you can offer a female? And I'll give it to you, Lydia, to start with. And just...
I think, like what we've said, seek support.
How about you, Natasha?
And to say no.
That's true. Okay, well, I wanted to say thank you to both of you for coming in to join us today. It's been really enlightening. So I hope you have a happy International Women's Day.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
And that's all we have for you on The Money this week. A special thanks to our wonderful and inspiring women, Natasha Jansons, accountant, founder of Women with Sense and author of Wonder Woman's Guide to Money, and Lydia Musa, founding director and lead facilitator of The Change Hub. Don't forget the hashtags Each for Equal and IWD 2020. Special thanks to our executive producer, Roderick Chambers, and producers Veronica Alishina and Daniel Ellison. On the Money is produced in the studios of Radio 2SER for the Community Radio Network with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all our shows and stories at 2ser.com/onthemoney. Follow us on Twitter, look for @onthemoney2ser, and find us on Facebook. I'm Tanya Katsanis. We'll be back again next week to give you the inside running of all things financial. Thanks for your company.